Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today, I am talking to the founder and creative director of Lawsuit Clothing, Keith Gray. And Keith, he's worked with the likes of Tomato, Kessels Kramer and Wealdon and Kennedy, with brands that include Nike, Honda, Diesel, Jaguar Land Rover, Selfridges, Adidas, Puma and Vex Generation. He has been personally requested by Kanye West to work on Yeezy, Willy Chavarria, Vice President of Design at Calvin Klein, and Sir Alex Ferguson to work on Nike Manchester United kit launches. Very excited to bring you this interview. You can find out more about Lawsuit over at the website lawsuitclothing.com, and here to tell you more about that and himself in his own words is Keith Gray.
I'm, as you say, creative director of Lawsuit. I've kind of worked in fashion for a number of years. After I studied graphic design at Central St. Martin's College, like sort of way back in the late 90s. And kind of, you know, after that, I'd sort of worked quite closely with like the cult political fashion brand Vex Generation. And I used to design like t-shirt graphics for them, as well as just everything from stickers. And but I kind of, you know, I've sort of like done from graphic design to art direction. I've done a lot of stuff with kind of ad agencies, but also working for a lot of sportswear brands like Nike and Yeezy. And it's kind of everything from actually apparel graphics right through to kind of fashion communication and stuff.
Talk to me about St. Martin's College. I'm always quite fascinated about that place. Like, what year are we talking and what was it like when you were there?
It was really funny, because I do go back quite often and lecture at UAL, as it's called now, an umbrella. I mean, King's Cross at Granary Square is very much like a shopping centre now. And I mean, it's kind of a little bit, it's quite funny because it's, well, I'm going to use the word state of the British education system. But whenever I go back there and lecture, and it's kind of like the head course there now, she was in my year and stuff. And you know, it was kind of, we was actually, before they moved to Granary Square, we was at Longacre. We were the last year to be at Longacre with, and it was Longacre, Southampton Row. And, you know, it wasn't long. Alexander McQueen was just a couple of years before, and Hussein Chalayan and all of those sorts of greats. And it was funny because I remember, when I went to St. Martin's, I actually snuck on board the bus that was going from Colchester Art School taking the foundation students. And as soon as you used to go into that building, it was like you could just feel what had come before. And it's very, very, very different now. But it was very much of that time of the late 90s. And kind of, you know, after I was at St. Martin's, there was a design collective called Tomato. That was my first placement place. And two-thirds of Tomato were the band Underworld. And Tomato at the time did all the title graphics for Trainspotting. And they were that, all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, at that time, designers were like rock stars. And all I wanted to do was design record sleeves and make music promos. But
very cool. Yeah. I mean, I remember doing a course on Alexander McQueen for my fashion course. It wasn't at St. Martin's, but I did like a module on Alexander McQueen and how, like, those early shows that he would do, which are up at King's Cross, they're Cold Drops Yards now, but those places, and there used to be old rave warehouses, and people back in the day would, you'd see like the likes of Liam Gallagher kind of sneaking in and just smoking in the wings, and it felt like a moment in time that's kind of cryopreserved before social media, before everyone had their phones, you know, they were watching it with their own eyes and experiencing it kind of in the raw, in the flesh. Are those moments kind of real to you still those days?
They very much are. And it's exactly, being up in Manchester at the moment, exactly that, what you're talking about, is there was that stuff going on and like taking over those derelict spaces. And, you know, in the East End with all of the Brit up around Shoreditch, it was all Tracy Emin, you know, on Fournier Street, it was the Gilbert and George, Tracy Emin, Damien Hirst. And you know what? And these people were just doing it off of their own back because they wanted to do it, and they had something to make and they had something to say. And it wasn't about, you know, it wasn't about being interested in celebrity status, but it was about expression of humanity. And, you know, like, it's kind of was the antithesis of what social media influencing and that, and it was just about doing it and wanting to do it, and very like industrious at the same time. And, you know, it was at the time where all the gangsters around Hackney were laundering their money through the derelict warehouses, and the way that they do that, where they would let all the artists have the warehouse spaces to live in and to working and stuff. And it was kind of this amazing combination, melting pot of kind of people just doing stuff. And and all of that stuff sort of kind of round King's Cross and McQueen. And, you know, it's sort of with, like, I remember Hussein Chalayans, like, in his third year, it was just, he would be doing stuff like taking his clothes, taking it to Hackney Marshes and burying them in the clothes, and then just seeing what happened to them. And there was this real great, not for the sake of, like, it was going to make him famous or do anything, but he just had these crazy ideas and was just doing it.
Did McQueen ever go back to St. Martin's College while you were there?
No, he didn't. It was not during that time, but, you know, it was, that sort of, like, at the time, though, the St. Martin's alumni was very kind of like close sort of knit. And, you know, like, whereas, because I didn't actually study fashion, I studied graphics, so it was a very different department. But then again, there was all sort of like the design greats and everyone, like, you know, Phil Baines as a typography teacher and different things and that. So it was this amazing, because the way that the course was set up, I mean, I'm sure the fashion students had that contact and tuition with these sort of masters, as did we with filmmakers and graphic designers and art directors and different things.
And so from there, talk to me about the next steps of where you went from St. Martin's College. I know you did, you were the head of creative at ASOS and then global creative director at Jaguar Land Rover. Am I kind of fast tracking into the future? Were there lots of steps in between?
Quite fast tracking. So, kind of like after Tomato, what happened, I won Creative Reviews Creative Futures initiative for design, and we got to like design an window in Selfridges and different things. And, you know, it's kind of when I left, all I did was start taking my portfolio around to like places like when I met Adam and Joe at Vex Generation. I remember I would just be ringing these people up going, can I come show you my portfolio, you know, from the payphone on Burdett Road in Mile End, where my sort of student flat was. And, you know, I never forget the first time like ringing up and like Joe Hunter from Vex picking the phone up and kind of, you know, is it? And you know, those guys kind of became very, very close friends of mine. And it's sort of that was an entrepreneurial spirit of it, everyone kind of helping each other out. And when I say entrepreneurial, I don't mean from a sort of business or financial goal. It was just mates helping mates out and stuff like that. And but after winning that, I got an actual letter in the post, like, which you wouldn't get anymore. I remember it from Dave Bell, who was the ECD of Kessels Kramer at the time. Kessels Kramer were a Dutch communications agency, very famous for doing all the old diesel ads, like the Save Yourself stuff and everything like that. So I was over in Amsterdam for a couple of years working as a designer, art director, coming back working on Nike at Wieden & Kennedy. And, you know, like and all the while still doing all the other stuff, like helping Vex out and different things, some stuff with Mandarina Dot, Izzy Mayaki. There was a great Tank magazine, is massive now, but Masood and stuff, when they first started, I went to see them at their little office. I was doing little spreads, design spreads for them when their magazine was like this, was tiny, you know, and they have very short sort of like subscription rates and things like that. And But I think kind of like, really funny enough, what sort of like happened a little bit was, and this all kind of led up to the formation of Lawsuit, was, you know, one of the things kind of like when you're growing up and you're encouraged to follow your dreams and what your dreams and ambitions are, is as you kind of progress through your career, one of the things you don't sort of get taught is actually your ambitions and your dreams and things change. you know, and whatever. And I think for quite a long time, I was quite sort of, I would say I was misplaced. I'd kind of lost what it was that I wanted to do. Or maybe it was that I never discovered what I wanted to do. I mean, they sort of say that at university is a time that you should be figuring out what it is you want to do. But I think upon leaving university, you never, there's no one thing. Oh yeah, that's what I definitely want to do. You're continually sort of like discovering and sort of exploring. And I think for quite a number of years, I was in a situation where I was kind of doing whatever I liked in the hope that I would discover that I liked what I did, you know. And it's sort of like, and it was just a really interesting sort of like going ad agency and working at Nike, being asked by Sir Alex Ferguson to do kit launches. The only reason I was asked to do kit launches because people that work on Nike at their ad or design agencies absolutely love football, whereas I hate football. So I would approach it in a very different way. And I was quite capable of standing in a room with Wayne Rooney, Sir Alex and Ronaldo without falling to pieces. And,
even though I'm not a Man United fan, I still probably would fall to bits in that company. Yeah.
So it kind of like became a little bit misplaced, and it was great because it was like I was doing a bit of this and doing a bit of that and trying these different things out, and sort of like, I don't know how I couldn't even tell you how I kind of like ended up as head of creative at ASOS, but you know, that was a very misplaced experience for me, I think. But you learn a lot, you know. And by the time that I was doing a global creative director at Jaguar Land Rover, I was very unhappy. And I didn't realize it. And, you know, really funny enough, I think what kind of happened in a crazy turn of events was actually I was actually stabbed in my stomach and this is going to go somewhere, but I was stabbed in my stomach. And then when I was in hospital, I found out I had a tumor in my stomach, which I didn't know I had. And really funny enough, that really put me in a situation where I was able to take some time out to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. And then after that happened, I ended up getting an email from Kanye West's PA, because I'd kind of gone through this process of what it was that I wanted to do, and I love fashion and working in fashion. I got an email from Kanye West's PA. They were trying to find Adam and Joe from Vex Generation to help them design a bag. And then really funny, it turned out that a lot of my work was actually on his their mood board for that season's collection. And I thought it was some sort of scam or joke at first. And then she ended up ringing me and then goes, can Ye ring you? Ye rang me, and then me, Adam and Joe from Vex were on a plane the next day going to Chicago. And although they were working on the bag, I sort of ended up staying a bit longer and working with Ye and the team on kind of look and feel stuff for Yeezy, which was really good. And sort of, I guess, when I came back and then coming back to Manchester and not coming back to London, that was kind of like the formation of Lawsuit. I guess in quite a lot of way, I was nourished by that experience. And, you know, Ye is kind of amazingly creative, but amazingly, how can I put it, diplomatically, you know, a reputation for, you know, he's a very talented guy, but kind of nourished by that experience for both the good reasons and the bad reasons. And I think coming back to the country at the time with things like Theresa May, with Brexit, with the experiences that I had gone through and everything like that, I'd always had this idea of Lawsuit floating around, which was all about discontentment being the enemy of invention. Because sort of society felt very discontent and I felt very discontent, it kind of gave birth to this sort of idea of a clothing label that was about fashion, born out of the fury of the fallen, I guess, if I'm going to be very dramatic about the way that I talk about it.
Yeah. Well, lots to digest there, Keith.
I know.
Didn't want to interrupt you. I just felt like there was a good flow and I was fascinated. So I just thought I'd let you run with that. But I mean, we'll get to lawsuit in a sec, but a couple of things. On, you mentioned going back to like following your dreams. And I say this to quite a few people that come on the show. It is weird how you have this follow your dreams mantra beaten into you when really it's not the sort of stuff you want to be preaching about. What you really want to be preaching is about having a great work ethic, you know, getting up at the crack and outgunning the guy next to you who's going to be trying to get up an hour earlier than you and working harder. The whole follow your dreams thing felt to me when I was growing up in the 90s, it felt like if I just make it in a band and I become famous, if just someone listens to my demo, then I'm there, then I've arrived. So I'll follow my dreams right down to the edge of the cliff. And then you kind of hit your mid-30s and you have that Fight Club mentality of like, oh, we're not famous and we're pissed off about it. So you go, well, what now? And it becomes quite hard the older you get to try and rebrand yourself and convince other people, no, this is what I'm about now. I'm doing this thing over here. You used to know me for this, but now I'm changing it. Because people kind of like to place you and pigeonhole you. Yeah. And not just you, like me, everyone, right? Yeah, so
everyone. And I think there's very much of a thing of really funny, of particularly in a sort of creative industry where really funny enough, I don't think people, like once you get that pigeonhole thing and then it's there and it's safe. And actually really funny in kind of a lot of my experience, people don't like to see you doing well and people don't like to see you kind of transforming yourself. And, you know, it kind of, you know, it's very much of life, this thing of follow your dreams and you're steadily going up, but it's not, and you continually get somewhere and then you, that's not right. And you want to reinvent yourself, but it feels like the world or society isn't set up in that way. So we then have things, phrases like midlife crisis, where you're kind of vilified for this, when actually I kind of feel like it's more like a midlife awakening where you've gone this one way and had this, you feel a bit duped. So you find, and actually, but you're vilified in a way to say that that's a bad thing. You're having a crisis, but actually when it's kind of just, you're finding a different way and kind of an awakening.
Yeah. And if you just so happen to get a cocktail waitress as a girlfriend aged 18 and a Porsche to put in the middle of that, then who's complaining?
Yes, exactly. There we go. Yes. If you want to go out and buy a 2-litre GTI and have it wrapped in matte black, or, you know, I'm going to go out and spend my life savings on a G-Wagon, then, you know.
Exactly. That is your prerogative and no one can call you out on it. listen, one last thing, I guess, before we get into lawsuit. I mean, a million things, but, you know, we don't have all the time in the world. But the stabbing, so you got stabbed. What happened?
Yes. it was just basically where I was living in Shadwell. I mean, it was kind of a sort of homophobic and racist attack. And, you know, but it wasn't actually that event. It was, you know, going to hospital and the stabbing having saved my life, which was the thing, which was a crazy, I don't know if it was a head fuck. It was a complete head fuck. I'm not going to lie, because it was, the tumor apparently was, I'd had it since birth and I didn't know it was there, and it was in my bowel and it was so big that had I not been stabbed and taken to hospital, it would have been, I would have maybe had a week to live before it exploded in my bowel. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing of coming to terms with that, which
That's
was
bananas. Like,
but, you know, like, it's kind of like one of those things. It's like I was saying, if you parallel that at a time in my career, you know, it's kind of that way that the universe works. You know, it's sort of, it's kind of the physical and metaphysical things kind of like aligning. So just being very miserable, very, really unhappy in my life. And that kind of, I think, it's like only at the precipice do you evolve. And it's sort of like, that's one of those points where you kind of have to become completely fallen, you know, like it. And as you said, the Fight Club thing, that was one of those moments, if I refer to that film, where, because Fight Club is very lawsuit in a lot of ways, having grown up on that, is, you know, only after you give up everything are you free to do anything. And it was very much one of those moments that was like, everything's gone, you know. So
let's talk about lawsuit. I want to get into it. So how old, when was it born, and talk to me about the inspirations other than what you've already spoken.
So, So Lawsuit is about 2 or 3 years old. I mean, I think Lawsuit is one of those things which is probably a lifelong thing. I mean, kind of like a lot of people were telling me that I should write a book about different experiences or things, but you know, it's kind of as a multi-channel storyteller, rather than write a book, I was like, it would be more interesting to tell these stories through a fashion kind of like, not that I consciously thought exactly that at the time, but you know, Lawsuit, coming back from the States after working with Ye on Yeezy, it was I'd had this idea floating around for a while, and although Lawsuit is a lot of different things, you couldn't put it on one thing. I mean, it was definitely always interested in social trends, not fashion trends, having worked in fashion, all about these issues of self-worth and everything that I'd kind of like gone through, but it actually, the core of the idea for Lawsuit started when I had this idea for a tracksuit. Coming back at the time, there were a lot of brands that were doing stuff like, you know, Pepsi and Filler doing these collabs, and it's like kind of like Pepsi's way of buying their way into the, but it's very exploitative of the youth as well, because it's almost like, oh, we've got no new ideas, let's just get Pepsi involved, and then we can make a sweater that's blue, red and white, and then Pepsi can give us a lot of money for it, and then we can sell loads to kind of 16 to 24 year olds, and then, you know, Pepsi have established themselves as a youth authority, and you know, so I had this idea of doing a joke tracksuit, which was, we did a tracksuit that was a collab of 50 different brand labels, and it was literally like, almost looked like urban camouflage, this tracksuit, kind of like as if you'd taken Piccadilly Circus and put it on a sweater and but in the label it read, MB, we do not have permission to use any other brand logo, and so it was a very much a social and fashionable comment, but the tracksuit was literally a lawsuit, it was almost like the best thing that could have happened for Lawsuit was to get a lawsuit in a way, which was kind of like
a cease and desist or anything like that.
No, like there was no lawsuit that came of it, but right. It would have been, how fantastic would it have been had we got a lawsuit for it. But that was sort of like, so the idea of then Lawsuit became about, as I was thinking, if we did get a lawsuit, then I would actually put the lawsuit up online, and, you know, that would become the advert for the tracksuit. And what was really interesting with this spark of an idea, and it's sort of like funny that the Lawsuit logo became a flame, because it was this spark that grew into something vast, which was that whole thing of making everything transparent. So if you get a lawsuit, put the lawsuit up, and that's where this idea of Lawsuit all of a sudden became something bigger, and it was like cultural and social trends, not fashion trends, but we basically wanted a platform that told the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and, you know, like a space that puts every day on trial. And that was kind of like the genesis of Lawsuit.
What could you just clarify or drill down on the differences between what social trends are and fashion trends in your mind?
Yes, so and that's a very good question, because obviously fashion is greater than garments, you know, like fashion is a lot of things. It can be the way people behave, it can be, but when I talk about social trends, it's kind of like, for instance, what I'm interested in is things like, for example, we did a thing last year with footballer David Cox after he was abused on pitch for his mental health. So, you know, mental health as a social trend and tackling that, rather than, when I just say the word fashion trends, just when I mean fashion trends, I mean like, because long line t-shirts, we're not making clothes because long line t-shirts or drop crotch joggers are in trend. Right. We are making a t-shirt because we're trying to make a social statement and positive social change about issues that affect people's lives.
I'm with you, thanks. And so the garments are now online at lawsuitclothing.com, place people can go. Have we got any plans? Are we doing any bricks and mortar, or is it just online for now?
No, online for now. Absolutely do bricks and mortar. I mean, it's going to, like, later this year. I can't tell you which stores it's going to be available in, but absolutely planned to be a space, you know, like, and I mean, I'm not too sure what that space or anything will be yet, but kind of like quite interested in thinking about a space, you know, like a lot of people go, oh, it's a cultural venue and it's a thing and it's a club. I quite like the idea of, like, in Germany, and when you go to these nightclubs in Hamburg and they have stylists and hairdressers on the dance floor and you can get your hair cut. I quite like the idea of doing something cross between a barber shop and a clothing shop or something like that. I quite like those sorts of mashes. So
yeah.
Absolutely bricks and mortar somewhere, or you know, unusual or unexpected places like pop-up stores on building sites and things like
that. I've been on many building sites. I've worked construction most of my life, and that would be a welcome break in the day to see something that I could just buy on.
Yeah, well, how, but you, all the clothing, how great is scaffolding as clothing rails? So it's, you know, it's all ready to be done.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, Keith, I could talk to you all night, I feel. I realise you've got a life to get on with and got a bit of a hard out, but again, lawsuitclothing.com. We'll put all the links and notes over at menswearstyle.co.uk so people can get another idea of the imagery over there. And the social, where do you like to hang out on the social pages, if at all?
God, all sorts, really. I mean, I kind of am very much one not for the usual typical places. I like to get lost in rabbit holes of all sorts. For example, what was this blog that I was looking at, like, literally just earlier, is this thing that I like, Fat Kid on Fire was this blog that I found sort of like earlier on thing. And then I like these sorts of things, and then I just start sending them messages and then start talking, and then we discover all sorts of other things. It's kind of like social things for me. On I'm kind of like really interested in, like, one of the ways that we started talking with footballer David Cox was I was driving one time in a car, and he was on BBC Sports about being abused for it. And then Instagram is actually a great place for connecting with. I just started chatting to him on Instagram, and then we came up with this whole idea of a collection thing and stuff like that. But in terms of social spaces as well, Manchester's a great place for, you know, as we were talking about earlier, with those great experiences like up in King's Cross or in down in Shoreditch as well. You know, Manchester, because it's not as vast as London or that sort of thing, it's kind of like Manchester has a feel about it that's like the physical version of social spaces, as a way of it's like, you know, going out and you meet people, videographers or people that run the independent clothing stores, and there's that kind of whole physical social thing that goes up on here. So
yeah, and the original Cottonopolis as well, the place where it all began for for the UK.
Keith, the guts of Britain.
Yeah, there's also I read in this book here, I've got to hand, no good for you on the podcast, just showing it up to Keith, Fashionopolis. There is a factory in Manchester. It's like the oldest factory. It's not the one that Private White operate out of. It's another one. And I think it's a textile company. Though. I don't know. Anyway.
I'm not too sure. I'll have to, if Fashionopolis is that called. I will.
Yeah, no, it's a really good book. It's by Dana Thomas. It's all about the price of fast fashion. And
But it's interesting, that stuff. And again, sorry, I know we said we're going to carry on. No. But fast fashion, like, there's a couple of things there which are really interesting, I think. It's like, you know, kind of, yeah, with fast fashion and stuff. I mean, there's all that stuff with fast fashion at the minute where they say they're sustainable and all of this stuff going on. But the thing is whether you're using sustainable cotton, you know, you're still making 16,000 garments times 16,000 every season. So even if you're using organic, you're still using that amount of materials, that amount of water, and you've still got that amount of waste and stuff. And it's kind of quite interesting being up here and with the factories as well, whereas, you know, they used to say, man, the Northwest was like the guts of Britain with the mills. And when you look at old photographs of everyone lined up in those mills, kind of the repetitive thing, it's funny now, because when you look at pictures of design studios and offices in London, although they're not sat at cotton mills, it's almost
like uniforms.
It's kind of, EastEnders been replaced as the guts of Britain, but with technology rather than machinery.
Interesting comparison. Well, listen, I could talk to you all night, Keith. I'm sorry, but my missus has got the dinner on the table and I could hear clank it away. Right. I'd like to tell you there's another reason, but that's
absolutely fine. Lovely to talk to you, Peter.
And you, mate. Take care. And when you're in London next, give us a shout. We'll go out and do some coffee. Brilliant.
Yeah. Good night. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.